Stacey Johnson with KGNU, visiting today with Melissa Akie-Wiley, Deputy Town Administrator for Erie, Colorado. Prior to joining the Town of Erie this past spring, Melissa was a founding member and director of Peak Academy, a Denver municipal program that trains and coaches employees at all levels to improve the way government functions. Besides having an extensive and accomplished career as a public servant, Melissa started the Denver Animal Shelter's Jog a Dog volunteer program and has helped kids overcome bullying through interactive storytelling. Melissa is currently working on a memoir that tells about her experience being attacked by dogs as a youngster and the subsequent bullying and judgment that has followed. Melissa, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Stacey.
If you're comfortable with this, can you tell listeners a little bit about the dog attack that you experienced as a child and how you recovered or dealt with that experience?
Yes. So I was raised in Boulder, Colorado, and it was a night shortly after my fifth birthday, and I went outside to play with some family friends' dogs. There were two pit bulls, and my mom was cooking dinner in the kitchen. She turned around briefly, and in that small period of time that she turned around to cook in the kitchen, two dogs essentially ripped off my face. So that was my fifth year, and that was the story that happened. After that, from the time I was 5 to the time I was 23, I've had over 30 reconstructive surgeries. I had surgeries all in sort of the Denver-Boulder area, a couple plastic surgeons, and then the subsequent reconstruction and bullying that followed with each surgery. You know, at the time, they put these what they called balloons into my faces, which would stretch out the skin and put some skin grafts and fat grafts back into my cheeks. And so, as you can imagine, those types of surgeries left me looking really different, really jarring to people. And so much of my story is what it feels like to walk in the world, especially as a child, when the world is very disturbed by your presence.
What is it that you want listeners to learn and know from your wisdom and experience from not only surviving that traumatic event, but also continuing living with subsequent negativity, receiving harsh comments and judgment?
Yeah, what I want people to know is that we are often much closer to tragedy than we think, and I don't say that to alarm people. I say that just because, you know, all of our lives are precarious, our health, our wellness. It's all dependent on coming and going safely, and I think we're a little bit closer to the edge than we think we are. And so we can sometimes act in a way that is judgmental and self-righteous and looks down upon others who've gone through suffering. I think what I learned from my own suffering was it was very visible, but not often are people's hardest days so visible. So I've had the experience of when I'm grocery shopping or running errands, people ask me about the worst day of my life because the worst day of my life is on my face. For other people, those things are maybe invisible, but we should all live in empathy and reduce our judgment to others because we've all been in those days and those situations that didn't go as we thought they would go, and they left us scarred either physically or emotionally. And so I hope people hear me and hear my story and give more reverence to the precarious nature of life, give more gratitude to the joy we have, and just be a little softer on each other and our experiences.
You have written, "We have the ability to transform pain like alchemists if we choose to make a connection, listening and humanizing the story of another. If we are willing to sit in pain with another, just as we would want someone to do with us." Is that how interactive storytelling helps kids overcome bullying, or is that how it has helped you?
Yeah, so I say that books were really my salvation as a kid, and it's because, you know, as a kid, I only had my experience of growing up where I grew up in my family, and I didn't realize how many other people had had similar experiences or similar traumas. And when I started to read and know the stories of others, I felt so connected to humanity. I didn't feel alone anymore. I felt that there's this connection, and our connection is oftentimes our pain and the knowledge from the pain and what we do to transform that pain. And so storytelling through music as well really saved me and made me feel connected. When I talk to students now, one of the things I do is I go into schools and I ask the students to judge me. And they do. And I'm jarring to them. I mean, we should think about what children are taught. So think about who's often the villain in a movie. Often the villain is disfigured and facially disfigured or disabled. So in our narratives that our children already have, a villain or someone who's scary is someone who actually looks like me. And so I'm very empathetic to the fact that they might see someone like me and think that I might be evil or scary, and that's the narrative they make up. I ask them to judge me, and then I share my story. And what always happens is at the end of me sharing my story, I ask them to raise their hand and tell me if their initial perception of me changed. And I watch a room full of kids raise their hand. And then we talk about, what is the narrative that you've heard about people who look like me? And what do you feel of me being in this room? And what that experience shows for them is we make up stories about people. And often our stories are judgmental and harsh and critical. And people do the same to us. And so the students know, all children know how it feels to be on the receiving end of a made-up story. And they also know how it feels to show an authentic story or to hear an authentic story. And when I leave that space, what I hope I leave them with in my work with them is the ability to see another person and at least say, I don't know their story and I'm curious, and they don't know my story, and I'm going to allow some vulnerability and authenticity in hopes of connection. And I think that's what really reduces bullying over time.
Have you had any kids report back, hey, your story has really made an impact on my life or how I approach seeing others?
Absolutely. You know, I work in a high school in Colorado Springs, and a lot of those students at that high school are students who have struggled in traditional high school environments. What I find is when I share my story, sometimes they're so overcome with emotion, they have a hard time not crying or commenting or asking me really tough questions. And, you know, some of the questions I've gotten from students, one question that comes up every time I talk to students is, does it ever stop hurting? I told myself that if I was going to work with students, I would always be honest. And so the honest answer is no, that's not how pain and trauma are. I think pain and trauma, they change, they might soften, they might ebb and flow over time. But part of us will always hurt if we've gone through something really traumatic, especially in my case, if people continue to comment and look at me and you know, judge me. And so I'm honest with them, but I'm also honest of what pain can do and the value and the worth it can give to your life. And I think for students, you know, sometimes we think just because someone is young that they haven't also seen many hardships in the world. And I think being around me also allows students the space to explore things in their own life that can be hard and also explore that own alchemy for themselves. Like, what are they to make of those hardships and what meaning are they to make of their lives?
I've read that while helping your Japanese grandmother settle into United States culture, you developed a deep appreciation for the challenges of navigating complex government processes with language and cultural barriers. Can you expand upon that or explain more?
Yes, absolutely. So my grandma immigrated to the United States in her 30s. She was married to an American soldier. And when he passed, she was really forced to navigate the country on her own and with her teenage daughter. And, you know, English was her second language. She didn't go to school in the United States. She hadn't worked in the United States. And as I helped her navigate things from her banking to getting a driver's license, what I noticed is how complex processes are, how legally written the language can be, and how those types of processes work really well if you were born and raised in the United States, if you've been educated in the United States, if you can navigate complex legalese. And they're really hard if you're not familiar with all those things. And so seeing her experience made me naturally think about how language could be simplified, how process could be more straightforward, how people's life experience could even be changed depending on, take something as simple as a DMV line. One time I took her to get an identification card at the DMV, and someone said, I'll help her come further in the line because she's older, and they saw me already take her to the bathroom four or five times since we had been there. And so that's just a good example of thinking about someone's experience of the space, of the service. Who can you prioritize? How can you simplify? And I think navigating all those spaces with her made me realize how unnecessarily complex and bureaucratic systems are. often that stems from legal challenges or mistakes that have been made, but it doesn't stem from the customer perspective or from the user's perspective. And so when I went to work for Peak Academy, I really thought about who is this service for? How do they experience it? And how can we redesign it from a customer service, customer first perspective?
And can you provide an example of a process that you changed?
Yes. So one of my favorite projects I worked on was with the Denver Animal Shelter. And what we were looking at was the time to adopt an animal. So the time an animal came into the shelter to the time it was adopted out. And this is a really important metric because the longer an animal stays in a shelter, the more likely it is to deteriorate. There are infectious diseases like parvo that are easy for animals to contract in a shelter environment. And then there are also challenges with when you put an animal in an unnatural environment where they can hear other animals barking or can smell those animals but not see them. Sometimes their behavior will change and you can actually turn a good dog bad by leaving an animal in a stressful environment. So the length of time an animal is in a shelter really needs to be reduced for the health of everyone. And so we looked at every detail of shelter operations, from intake of the animal with the animal control officer or the front desk staff, to the veterinary clinic and spaying and neutering and vaccinating, to volunteer activities, looked at every single detail of the process and were able to reduce that by half, and became one of the premier shelters in moving animals to adoption quicker. I just love this story because it's a metric that on the surface doesn't seem riveting, and in fact, it is so central. And it also showcases the importance of looking at every minute detail in the process, because every one of those details mattered. One of my favorite details in the story is the picture we take of the animal that then goes on the website. One of the challenges was getting the animal to look directly at the camera and get a good picture. So if it was your animal and you lost it, you could see really clearly that it was yours. Or if you wanted to adopt it, you could see a good picture. And one of the animal control officers had the idea of putting a squeaky toy at the camera so the animal would look directly at the camera. So really simple innovation, really tiny part of the process. And it was a game changer.
It seems like in today's society, there is a negative connotation towards government. What is something you feel the public doesn't understand or appreciate about those who work in the public sector, or perhaps the role of government?
That's a great question. So when I was at Peak Academy, I taught a class, and I taught it once a month, and there was about 25 people in every class, and I taught this class 100 times. So that's how many public servants I talked to and met, and these were public servants from municipalities all across the country. And I always ask the question, why do you work where you work? And the number one answer for all those people was because I want to do good with my life. I want my life to be meaningful, and I want my life to be meaningful in my own community. I think people see folks who work in government and they think we're bureaucratic or controlling or have these agendas or all these type of narratives that are made up about people who work in government. In my experience, the people who work in government are people who want to spend their lives in service to others. And an active service. So in local government, I often refer to it as where the rubber meets the road. You're really interacting with residents. You're building their roads. You're finding their animals. You're setting up business and infrastructure. You're planning their parks. So you're really, really close to the resident. And the folks who choose those jobs, which are not that well paid, contrasting to popular opinion, they're not that well paid, are really truly, in my experience, people who want their lives to mean something and want their lives to mean something in their own communities where they see people every day. So what I hope that people think about in the government space is much like teachers or doctors or nurses. These are the folks who have spent their lives wanting to give back and do good with their lives, and the vitriol and the division really hurts at the local level, because in my experience, these are the best of the best and the best hearts. And I hope that we can lower the dial on some of that vitriol, because these are the folks we want. I mean, you don't want to have so much hostility and anger that you turn away the very people who are the best and brightest from the jobs you need so much.
And because we're speaking on a day that is kind of in the middle of Veterans Day and Thanksgiving, I have two more questions. Who is a hero in your life and why? And this person doesn't necessarily need to be military or someone who's widely known. Do you have a personal hero in your life?
Well, I'm going to do two people. I hope that's okay. So one is my mom. There's a lot of amazing research about why children survive trauma. And that's a question I often get, like, how did you survive? How would one survive that? And facial trauma, interestingly, in children is considered one of the worst disabilities a child can have because we rely so much on the face for connection, and children with facial trauma are often ostracized. And so that really is a lasting trauma in children. So how does one survive that? And the research is also remarkable that children can survive great trauma with attachment to one extraordinary caregiver. And for me, that was my mom. She went on to become a child therapist and really studied trauma in children, but my mom was that powerful. And so my secondary message for people is always, your love is that powerful. It is more powerful than pain. And I think my life is proof that the love of one person is actually enough to counteract all of the misaligned values of the world. My second answer is Brandi Carlile, the singer, and I've started following her career several years ago. She, you know, she is someone who's, she's gay and she's popular in music, and she's had quite a road to climb being a gay woman. And she is joyful. She's exuberant. She's authentic. She is true to herself. And watching her gives me so much inspiration for what it feels like to be an underdog in this world. And what it feels like when you let your joy be stronger than your adversity. And so I listened to her. She has an incredible song called The Joke. And the lyric is, but I've been to the movies and I've seen how it ends and the joke is on them. And I love that lyric because it just reminds me that for every underdog, for every kid I talk to who feels like they don't fit in, I just want to tell them that lyric, like the movie ends and eventually your story is the one that lasts.
This other holiday, Thanksgiving, that's coming up, what are you thankful for?
I'm really thankful for the ability to be a woman in leadership, a woman in high-level leadership in government. I think the day has come for women to have a seat at a table, and I take that responsibility so seriously. There's a great quote that says, those who are closest to pain should be closest to power. And so I take my leadership role very seriously. And I hope that my voice and my experience allows for another voice at the table that's more representative. And so I'm so thankful for that. I'm thankful to be a mother. This is a whole other story, but I was a person who thought I might never find love, who thought I might never be able to have a child. And I did fall in love, and I have a beautiful child. And I think that's part of the story too, that there's a lot of hardship in life and there's also a lot of joy, but you have to believe it's possible for yourself. And I'm grateful every day that the dreams I thought might never come true did. And I'm working on my memoir, and I'm really thankful to be able to write and to share my story. It took a long time for me to be brave enough to talk about what happened to me. If you would have talked to me 20 years ago and you would have asked what happened to my face, I would have avoided the question or answered really quickly and felt a lot of shame that you even noticed that there was something about me that was different. I've come a long way. You know, now I don't wait for people to ask. I tell them and I share my story openly, and I invite others to share their story too. And I'm grateful that I have healed my heart, because not everyone does. And I hope that my story is enough to make other people feel that healing is possible and that life is so beautiful on the other side.
Melissa Wiley is the Deputy Town Administrator of Erie, Colorado, storyteller and writer. She has joined us today for a conversation about the various elements of her life's work and the wisdom and beauty that come from a traumatic event. Melissa Wiley, thanks so much for sharing your life's work with us today. For KGNU, I'm Stacey Johnson.
Thank you so much for having me. Let us go.